Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Thursday, May 27th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Greer, reading for Laurent Belson.
And I'm Jessica Mendoza.
This morning had that late spring mix of moist air and sunlight, which made Laurent push a little, 3 miles, farther than he had run in months. So later, reading a clip about China's ultra-marathon disaster this past weekend, he felt a certain twinge. 21 ultra-marathoners died after being exposed to rain, hail, and high winds. Whenever athletes die in extreme sports, many wonder why they do it in the first place. When researchers in Poland queried more than 1,500 runners in 2018, they found many motivations: self-esteem, competition, health, weight loss concerns, and so forth. But the ultra-marathoners were different, talking about qualitative goals such as finding a life meaning and connecting with running friends. Saturday's toll could have been worse, according to news reports, except for the presence of Zhu Keming, who was tending his sheep and took refuge in a cave. That's when he spotted one of the distressed ultramarathoners and brought him inside, massaging his feet and hands and lighting a fire to dry his clothes. 4 more runners straggled in. Mr. Zhu ventured out and brought back yet another runner. That may be the most important question. Why did those runners stop? Exhaustion? Common sense? What caused them to stop pursuing the extreme and seek shelter in a warm fire with a shepherd? In some of Laurent's recent runs, he's walked for stretches, something that he thinks would have seemed shameful a couple of years ago. As he starts his 5th decade of adult running, he realizes he runs not for the distance or even the running itself, but for the sense of movement and the peace of the trees and the birds and the inspiration that comes. Now, today's stories. Our first story. China's government bases its legitimacy on bread and butter issues, but economic growth has come at the cost of massive debt. Trying to tamp it could test the party's willingness to push an unpopular policy.
In China, home ownership carries far more meaning than a roof over one's head. For millions of single men, who today greatly outnumber single women, it's a near requirement for marriage. Whole families often scrape together resources to give their sons a leg up in courtship by securing an apartment or house. Mr. Zhang, a retired homeowner who asked to withhold his first name for privacy, says, in most of China, it would be a huge loss of face for a man to move into his wife's home. That's only one reason that China's latest push to impose the first nationwide property tax on homeowners is politically touchy. Yet, Beijing is gingerly advancing the plan to confront its debt crisis after decades of debt-fueled growth. State media calls the problem a gray rhino. It's huge, and everyone sees it coming. The issue may test the Communist Party's willingness to push forward a controversial policy, knowing it could stir unrest. Mr. Zhang says he can't conceive of the government imposing such a tax. The government can't do that, he says, because it would run counter to the party's consideration of people's basic needs. He adds, it's not possible that they will force this on people. This story was reported by Anne Scott Tyson for The Monitor.
The human toll from Israel's retaliatory airstrikes in Gaza is palpable on the ground. Many residents worry that it won't be the last war in their territory.
A week after Israel and Hamas agreed to a ceasefire, Palestinians in Gaza are still digging through the rubble. The scale of destruction from Israeli airstrikes is staggering. 450 buildings destroyed and 6 hospitals demolished. So too is the human toll of death, suffering, and displacement. Families are now reuniting after dividing their children among friends and relatives, so that should their home be hit by a missile, at least one of their children would survive. It's a familiar dilemma. Israel previously waged wars against Hamas, the militant organization that runs Gaza, in 2009, 2012, and 2014. In addition to the destruction of homes, the war pummeled Gaza's public infrastructure. The United Nations is due to seek international donations for rebuilding, but there's also wariness of another conflict. Some Gazans are joining volunteer groups to help shift debris from the streets. Gada Abu Samra is a university student who joined an apolitical youth-led campaign. She says, removing the rubble is a way to challenge the reality of 11 days of shelling. She wants to show the world that Gaza has and can stand up again. This story was reported by Isra Name in Gaza City and Taylor Luck in Amman, Jordan for The Monitor.
Parents have long been a coveted political demographic, but the upheaval of the past year has turned many into passionate local activists who say they will keep advocating long after the pandemic subsides.
After an academic year like no other, school boards across the country have become lightning rods for political debate. As Zoom classes dragged on, and with many public schools even now not fully open, heated battles have erupted over how to balance the safety of teachers and students against other concerns, such as learning loss and mental health. Increasingly intense debates have also opened up over educational content, particularly the anti-racist curricula that many schools implemented in the wake of last summer's Black Lives Matter protests. Some conservative states are banning the teaching of critical race theory. Others, like Virginia, are reevaluating gifted and talented programs and accelerated math tracks. History suggests the political impact could extend well beyond school boards. Grassroots activism often leads to broader and more permanent movements. This is particularly true when driven by strong emotion, as in the case of parents who feel their children are being negatively impacted. David Campbell is an expert on civic engagement at Notre Dame University. He says, this is not the first time we have seen issues around public schools be flashpoints for controversy. You can think of school board politics as the gateway drug to greater involvement across the board. This story was reported by Story Hinckley in Falls Church, Virginia, for The Monitor.
Reports of assault have made many women wary of ride-hailing companies. Women-only services may be part of the answer.
It's hard to miss Ubiz cabs in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The hot pink cabs swoosh up and down the busy streets, and the women behind the wheel wear matching pink and gray uniforms. This is Kinshasa's first ride-hailing service, and it's by women for women. In Africa, as is true around the world, reports of harassment or assault have left many women wary of ride-hailing apps. Many companies are promising more stringent regulations, but some are pioneering women-first options, all-female driver fleets, for example, or services that allow female riders to select female drivers. Ubiz, for example, is the brainchild of entrepreneur Patricia Nzolantima, who says part of her vision is empowering women. Applying for a job with the company was not an easy decision, says recent graduate Ruth Nsindula. Being a female driver is not the norm here. But the salary and safety protocols convinced her. She says, when customers find out it's a woman behind the wheel, they feel confident and safe. This story was reported by Shola Lawal in Lagos, Nigeria, for The Monitor.
Brexit was defined in part by ideologies of nationalism, pride, and independence. But for others, like the oyster harvester featured in this photo essay, it's the practical effects of leaving the European Union that are on their mind. You can find Jonathan Browning's photos and essay in today's issue. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on tapping into Arab youth aspirations. A Monitor story on the aftermath of the 11-day war between Israel and Hamas has found a phenomenon in Gaza that fits a trend across much of the Arab world: high distrust of government. Young Palestinians in the war-battered strip of land are volunteering for an independent campaign called We Will Rebuild. Its initial focus is removal of debris from bombed-out buildings. With that first step, said one activist, we are clearing the pathway for a new reality. Young Gazans may be just the people that the United States and other foreign powers want to reach after the fourth Israel-Hamas war. These big donors plan to bypass Hamas and channel massive financial aid in a manner that does its best to go to the people of Gaza, said one U.S. official. The attempt to directly assist young Gazans reflects a region-wide trend by many leaders to stay in tune with the two-thirds of the Arab population that is under the age of 30. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Join us tomorrow when we look at the results of California's strict gun controls. In today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective, our contributor shares how seeing and being seen spiritually contribute to meaningful interactions with others. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.